Right place, right time, right team. A review of good practice and remediable factors in the delivery of care provided to children and young people under 18 years old undergoing emergency, non-elective, surgery under anesthetic or sedation. A report published by the National Confidential Inquiry into Patient Outcome and Death, 2025. The National Confidential Inquiry into Patient Outcome and Death, NCPOD, is an independent body to which a corporate commitment has been made by the medical and surgical royal colleges, associations, and faculties related to its area of activity. NCPOD is a company, limited by guarantee, 301-9382, and a registered charity, 107-5588. The Child Health Clinical Outcome Review Program is commissioned by the Healthcare Quality Improvement Partnership, HQIP, and funded by NHS England and the governments of Wales, Northern Ireland, and Jersey as part of the National Clinical Audit and Patient Outcomes Programme.
Copyright 2025 Healthcare Quality Improvement Partnership, HUP.
Notes for readers. This report relates to patients undergoing non-elective procedures, including emergency, urgent, and expedited procedures. For ease of reading, we refer to all three as emergency procedures as the category did not affect the findings. Introduction from our chair. Since NCPOD last reviewed children's surgery in 2011, the quality of care provided has improved despite increased demand. This review highlights much good practice, but there is still room for improvement in both district general hospitals and specialist centres. Many of the findings appear reassuring. There was no delay in arrival at the admitting hospital in over 92% of cases, 84% of hospitals are part of networks for non-elective procedures, and up to 90% of surgeons and anaesthetists in non-specialist hospitals feel supported by their local paediatric centres for the acceptance of referrals and provision of advice. However, this means that around 10% of hospitals' surgeons and anaesthetists are not utilizing networks or feeling supported, which could translate into thousands of patients potentially affected. We found that increased centralization of elective surgical services for children has resulted in some healthcare staff in non-specialist units feeling less confident about providing emergency surgical care for critically ill children. To improve this, relevant training and the development of regional networks are essential so that children can be admitted or transferred to hospitals where staff have appropriate expertise. Pathways of care should be established for different conditions and age groups, with clinical networks available for advice when required. Transfer should only happen when necessary to minimize delays, with many conditions being most appropriately managed locally. Once admitted to hospital, it is vital that children have timely access to operating theatre lists. The appointment of an emergency theatre coordinator has been shown to improve care and reduce delays, but only half the hospitals reviewed had this role, despite it being recommended in existing guidance. Making this role a requirement would ensure that breaches are identified and escalated to avoid prolonged delays. Pre-surgery fasting policies are often not applied to children, resulting in 18% of children fasting for longer than is necessary. All efforts should be made to minimize fasting, for example by developing and following fasting protocols and avoiding delays to surgery where possible. Alongside updating local networks and policies, audits should be carried out regularly to assess compliance and identify further areas for improvement. Good practice should be shared to continue to improve care for children and young people. With many thanks to all involved at every stage of the production of this report, particularly the local clinicians, members of the study advisory group, clinical coordinators, NCPOD staff and trustees. Dr. Susie Lishman, CBE, NCPOD Chair. Recommendations. These recommendations have been formed by a consensus exercise involving all those listed in the acknowledgements. The recommendations have been independently edited by medical editors experienced in developing recommendations for healthcare audiences to act on. The recommendations in this report support those made previously by other organizations, and for added value should be read alongside the guidance listed with the recommendation.
1.
provide prompt access to emergency surgical and anesthetic care by specialists with the relevant training and experience in providing care to children and young people by formalizing organizational networks, utilizing existing operational delivery networks or equivalent where possible, to define where children and young people are assessed and/or undergo an emergency procedure, for example, whether the procedure can be undertaken locally or whether the patient needs to be transferred to a specialist center. This will require local and regional networks working together to ensure coordination of services and to agree pathways of care based on age and condition. Formalizing clinical specialist networks for advice as needed. Rationale for the recommendation. Networks were underused, and surgeons anesthetists who were not specialists often did not feel skilled to treat patients in the non-specialist centers but had no formal transfer option. Joined-up care is important in the recognition of the deteriorating patient and the escalation of care. For action by operational delivery networks or equivalent, commissioners and integrated care boards working with trusts health boards.
2.
One or more coordinators should be in place to ensure that children and young people needing emergency surgery have timely access to a theater. Patients who were not operated on within their prioritization period are highlighted and the issue escalated to senior management with responsibility for patient safety governance. If there are regular breaches for urgent and expedited patients due to emergency operating demands exceeding available resources, then alternative ways of dealing with this should be considered, e.g. planned urgent lists, hot lists, to prevent recurrence of future delays. Rationale for the recommendation. Care was shown to be better in centers where there was a coordinator. Anesthetic guidelines recommend having theater coordinating managers or clinicians. Theater booking systems did not highlight breaches. For action by commissioners and integrated care boards working with their trusts health boards.
3.
Prevent children and young people who are waiting for emergency surgery from being fasted for any longer than necessary. In the absence of likely gastric stasis, SIP-TIL-SEND could be considered, but note that this was not developed for emergency procedures nor in children and young people. There is new evidence around fasting in pediatric care, e.g. the Eurofast trial. Rationale for the recommendation. Children and young people were often fasted for too long, and fasting was infrequently recorded in hospital policies for emergency procedures for children and young people. For action by commissioners and integrated care boards in discussion with their hospital trusts health boards. Suggestion for future research. A UK consensus needs to be developed on fasting children needing surgery. 1. Methods. Study advisory group. A multidisciplinary group of clinicians was convened to steer the study from design to completion, define the objectives of the study, and advise on the key questions. The group comprised lay and parent carer representatives along with healthcare professionals in pediatric and adult surgery, generalists and specialists, anesthetics, generalists and specialists, neonatology, intensive care, radiology, nursing and allied healthcare. Study aims and objectives. To identify good practice and remediable factors in the care provided to children and young people under the age of 18 years who underwent emergency, non-elective, procedures under anesthetic or sedation. Study population and case ascertainment. Inclusion criteria. All children and young people aged 0 or 18th birthday who underwent an emergency, non-elective, procedure under anesthetic or sedation were identified between midnight Monday the 17th of June to 23:59 Sunday the 30th of June, 2024 and from midnight Monday the 12th of February to 23:59 Sunday the 25th of February, 2024. Patients were identified across two time frames to account for seasonal variation. Exclusion criteria. Children and young people who died prior to arrival in theater the procedure area. Identification of a sample population. Two preset spreadsheets were provided to every local reporter to identify all patients meeting the study criteria during the two defined time frames, from which a maximum of 7 patients from each hospital were randomly sampled for inclusion. Data collection. An organizational questionnaire collected hospital-level data on the organization of emergency and surgical services. Surgical, operator, and anesthetic questionnaires collected data on the procedure. A transfer questionnaire was sent to the clinician caring for the patient prior to transfer. A real-time clinician survey gathered data on delays to surgery during the initial sample period. An anonymous online clinician survey collected data on how confident and competent clinicians felt about providing emergency intervention for children and young people. Case notes were requested for the included admission of each patient for peer review. Data analysis rules. Small numbers have been suppressed if they risk identifying an individual, usually 5. Any percentage under 1% has been presented in the report as less than 1%. Percentages were not calculated if the denominator was less than 100 so as not to inflate the findings, unless to compare groups within the same analysis. There will be variation in the denominator for different data sources and for each individual question as it is based on the number of answers given. 2. Data returned and the study population. Data returned. 6,343 patients identified between 17th to 30th June and 12th to 25th February 2024. 1,089 patients selected for inclusion. 679 surgical questionnaires returned. 760 anesthetic questionnaires returned. 853 sets of notes reviewed. 60 transfer questionnaires sent and 36 returned. Organizational data. Organizational questionnaires were returned from 64.4% of hospitals. Survey data. Clinician survey, confidence and competency, 564 responses. Clinician survey, real time, 991 responses. Age and sex. The average age of all patients identified during the two sampling periods was 8.6 years, and the average age of patients included in the small sample for review was 9.8 years. While there was a higher proportion of children under 1 year old in the wider study population, these younger patients were more likely to undergo a procedure in a specialist tertiary pediatric hospital and so were less likely to be included in the sample for review. In total, 66.2% of patients included in the sampled study population were male and 33.8% were female. This was representative of the total patients identified in the wider dataset. The most commonly performed procedures were the manipulation fixation of joints, and this was similar to the sampled population with only slight variation in some of the procedures included. Ethnicity. Ethnicity data were available in the case notes for 78.5% of patients. The majority of patients sampled for inclusion in the study were white British or white other, which is consistent with the general population. United Kingdom census data show that 12.1% of 0 to 17 year olds are in the Black African Caribbean Black British or mixed multiple ethnic groups and were therefore potentially underrepresented in this study. Previous research has shown that children from Black and other minority ethnic groups are at a significantly higher risk of poor outcomes, with data from the Children's Acute Surgical Abdomen Program, CASAP, showing that ethnicity, but not socioeconomic status, was associated with an increased risk of postoperative complications in children having surgery for acute appendicitis. Comorbidities. Within the group of patients sampled for inclusion, 22.9% had an additional health condition, comorbidity, 14.8% of patients had one comorbidity reported and 8.4% had two or more. The most common were asthma, autism, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Reviewers indicated that 7.5% of patients had a communication difficulty. 30 patients had a language difficulty and 4 had a hearing difficulty. 36 patients were reported as having another communication difficulty, and in 12 of these patients autism was given as the reason. There were 45 patients who had a learning difficulty and 19 had a physical disability. Previous research has shown that children and adolescents face inequalities in accessing healthcare services. Within the group of patients sampled for inclusion in this study, reviewers found evidence of at least one characteristic associated with healthcare inequality or bias, and this negatively impacted the care provided to 1.4% of patients. The most common reasons given were learning cognitive disability and geographic deprivation travel time to hospital. 3. Arrival at the hospital. Before the admission to hospital that resulted in surgery, 38.8% of patients sought medical advice. This was most commonly from another hospital, with 80 patients subsequently transferred to the hospital where the surgery was carried out. Advice was also frequently sought from general practitioners. There were 20.5% of patients who had had a previous presentation to this hospital for the same condition, including a previous emergency department attendance, outpatient department appointment or admission. Where there had been a previous presentation, this was part of the normal pathway of care for this condition for 44 patients, and there was a delay in treatment for 12 patients. The reviewers considered that there was a delay in arrival at the admitting hospital for 53 patients. Self-referral to the emergency department of the hospital in which the procedure was undertaken was the most common mode of admission. Inter-hospital transfer. All surgical services for children should aim to work within regional networks involving local and regional services. Children presenting with common emergency surgical conditions should, ideally, be treated locally and not transferred to specialist centers, unless this is necessary for safe treatment. Good communication between hubs and spokes of care is essential. Furthermore, it has been documented that the increased centralization of elective surgical services for young children has reduced the proportion of staff who are confident in the emergency management of critically ill or injured children. There were 19 hospitals not part of a network of care for non-elective procedures in children and young people. Most hospitals reported transferring patients out for surgery. Data from the Clinician survey showed that 55.5% of clinicians transferred patients depending on hospital expertise. Fewer anesthetists than surgeons stated that they would transfer children requiring emergency surgery due to age. As the reported hospital specialization increased, the number of survey respondents willing to transfer children who required emergency procedures decreased. Existing standards state that hospitals without a suitable pediatric or neonatal intensive care bed should obtain the advice of the local pediatric intensive care unit, PQ, transport team as soon as possible during the management of sick or critically injured children or young people. Specialist tertiary pediatric centers with PQ facilities should provide clinical advice and help in locating a suitable PQ bed once a referral has been made. The management of children and young people requiring transfer should have input from all clinicians involved in their care. Respondents to the Clinician survey who worked outside of tertiary pediatric centers were asked about the levels of support they received from those centers. Anesthetists reported feeling more supported than surgeons in the acceptance of referrals. However, this meant that 8.9% and 17.6% of anesthetists and surgeons did not feel supported. Similar proportions of support from the tertiary center was found regarding the provision of advice. The most common reasons for not feeling supported were a lack of clear referral pathway and lack of beds in the receiving center. The guidelines for the provision of pediatric anesthesia services state that all anesthetists with a certificate of completion of training, CCT, should be competent to provide safe perioperative care for common non-complex elective and emergency procedures in children aged 1 year and older. There were 83.6% of patients who underwent their procedure in the hospital to which they first presented. There were 11.7% of patients who were transferred from another hospital. The most common reason for the transfer, given in 61 cases, was a lack of surgeon competent to undertake the procedure. Non-specialist pediatric centers should have arrangements for managing and treating simple surgical emergencies in children, such as acute appendicitis. In addition, they should be able to resuscitate and stabilize critically ill infants and children of all ages prior to transfer to a specialist center for surgery and/or critical care. On completion of training, anesthetists are expected to demonstrate competence in providing safe perioperative care for common non-complex elective and emergency procedures in children aged 1 year and older. Within the group transferred to another hospital, 49 patients underwent simple surgical procedures and 70 were over the age of 2 years. Surgeons and anesthetists who do not treat children in their elective workload may feel that they become deskilled following completion of their training. Many anesthetic departments maintain a core group of consultants who anesthetize children regularly and will support on-call teams either formally or informally. This is by no means mandated. We were unable to establish whether those transferred originated in such departments. Where there was evidence of a transfer in the case notes, the reviewers identified a delay in the transfer of 10 patients, and that this impacted the outcome for one patient. Reviewers considered the transfer to be inappropriate for 4 patients. Where there was a delay in transfer, this occurred almost exclusively over the weekend. Where a questionnaire from the referring hospital had been returned, there was a delay in the transfer for 3 patients, mostly due to the availability of imaging. Anesthetists reported that 5 patients who were transferred were unstable on arrival at the receiving hospital, with 2 deteriorating during the transfer. 4. Assessment and investigation. Initial assessment. Just under half of the patients were first assessed by an emergency medicine specialist, with trauma and orthopedics as the next most common, which would be expected for this group of patients. The grade of clinician responsible for undertaking the first assessment in the operating hospital did not appear to affect the overall quality of care, or whether there was any delay in treatment. However, the reviewers considered that the initial assessment was not performed by the most appropriate grade of clinician for 26.8% of patients. The reviewers considered that there was a delay in assessment for 4.9% of patients, and a delay in recognizing the need for surgical intervention for 4%, with delay in recognizing the need for intervention impacting negatively on 5 patients. Fracture and appendicitis were the most common diagnoses. The reviewers stated that an incorrect diagnosis contributed to delays for 4.3% of patients, and the most common misdiagnosis was appendicitis. The reviewers identified a small group of patients who should have been seen by a consultant but were not. Of these, 6 underwent an appendicectomy. A lack of consultant review did not appear to be associated with a delay in treatment. However, reviewers considered that a quarter of the patients with an incorrect diagnosis resulting in delay would have benefited from an earlier consultant review. From the case notes, a total of 60.8% of patients were admitted to a ward prior to surgery, and in the view of the reviewers, 89.6% were admitted to the appropriate ward and 97.2% were admitted under the correct specialty. Joint care with pediatricians and surgeons. Despite national guidelines recommending that all patients undergoing surgery should have immediate access to a consultant pediatrician either in person or by telephone, only 37.1% of patients were under the joint care of a pediatrician and surgeon. This is particularly important in hospitals with no pediatric surgical specialists on site. The provision of joint care was unrelated to the operation performed and hospital type. 5 to 9-year-olds were more likely to be under the joint care of a pediatrician and a surgeon, while this was less likely in the 15 to 17-year-old age group. Use of National Pediatric Early Warning Scores. The National Pediatric Early Warning System, NPEWS, was not used preoperatively for 24.2% of patients in our study. It was unknown whether they were used for 30%. NPEWS provides a standardized approach for identifying clinical deterioration in children, however, it has not yet been adopted by all hospitals. If deterioration is assessed in different ways, this may present challenges when patients are moved between hospital sites. Anesthetists considered 6.8% of patients to be high risk, and surgeons considered 10.2% of patients to be high risk. The surgeons reported all relevant investigations were performed for 96% of patients. However, in the view of the case reviewers, there were delays in performing investigations in 4.1% of patients, both factors that might contribute to the deterioration of a patient admitted as an emergency. Assessment of the use of NPEWS in different operation groups and for different urgencies of procedures showed usage was higher where the patient was under the joint care of a pediatrician and a surgeon. Management plans. The majority of patients had a management plan written following their initial assessment, and while it was noted that fasting was commonly recorded, it was not part of the plan for 29% of patients. Aspects of the care marked as other included details of medications, investigations, and treatment plans. In the opinion of the reviewers, 17.4% of patients were fasted for too long, with those who underwent an expedited procedure most likely to be in this category. Stabilization is of paramount importance before undertaking surgery. The reviewers reported that 6.5% of patients needed optimization preoperatively due to abnormal physiology. Among these, 9 had appendicitis, making it twice as common as any other condition. Appendicitis is a serious medical condition that should not be underestimated. Prompt diagnosis and treatment are essential to avoid potentially severe complications. The anesthetists reported 3% of patients required respiratory support prior to surgery. 5. Decision-making. Children and young people requiring emergency surgery are a mixed group, appearing on emergency, elective, adult and pediatric theater lists due to a range of medical, neurological and trauma factors. They do, however, share a commonality in the need for prompt assessment, diagnosis and immediate, urgent or expedited access to treatment. The last NHS long-term plan committed healthcare organisations to provide timely interventions and accurate delivery of emergency interventional care to mitigate lifelong complications. The new 10-year health plan builds on this by improving emergency care pathways, increasing the availability of same-day emergency care services, and improving triage systems and patient flow. Preoperative senior review. Most patients were seen by a senior decision maker, but there was a delay in assessment in 11.2% of patients. Reviewers were unable to identify the grade of clinician conducting the review in 24.9% of patients due to inadequate documentation. Most patients were seen by a consultant, although poor documentation meant that reviewers could not identify this in many patients. Where it could be assessed, the reviewers identified a delay in consultant assessment in 8% of patients. Ideally, all patients should be seen by a consultant within 14 hours of admission. This was the case for 74.3% of patients in our study. Patients who were reviewed promptly by a consultant were more likely to receive good care. Delays in decision-making. A senior clinician made the decision to perform the procedure for 69.4% of patients. Reviewers noted there was a delay in decision-making in 7.5% of patients, and this had a negative impact on patient care in 32 patients due to the delayed surgery. Delays in the decision to perform the procedure appeared to be more likely if the decision was made by more senior staff, but this likely reflects the fact that more complex procedures will require consultant input and additional investigations, and that more consultants were the decision-makers. There was no apparent delay in consultant decision-making reported out of hours. Reviewers noted that there was an inappropriate delay in treatment for 9% of patients, and this impacted negatively on the care of 43 patients. Theater access and urgency. Reviewers reported that while the majority of patients had their procedures booked without delays, 15.4% of patients experienced delays due to delays with or in the surgical team. Where grade could be determined, the fact that some patients were booked by less experienced staff did not appear to affect delays in booking procedures. However, patients undergoing less urgent procedures were more likely to wait longer from the decision to operate to the time of theatre booking, suggesting that these patients could be treated more effectively on non-urgent lists. Pre-procedure preparation was adequate for most patients. However, fasting was the most common response to the question about what should have been optimized. Following anesthetic review, most patients had their anesthetic commenced within 6 hours. Reviewers reported that many patients in the less urgent categories could have had scheduled surgery rather than being placed on a CPOD list. Reviewers noted that consultants and senior resident doctors were involved in anesthetizing most patients. They considered the grade of the operator to be appropriate for 99.6% of patients, and the grade of the anesthetist to be appropriate for 98.7% of patients. Younger patients were more likely to be anesthetized by a consultant. However, Some patients under 4 years of age and patients undergoing immediate surgery had anesthetic performed by a CT1-2 doctor or equivalent. Pathways. Reviewers noted that only 45.6% of patients were commenced on a dedicated pathway for emergency surgery in children and young people, and that many of those who were not should have been. Reviewers also noted that the pathways for treating patients as a planned urgent procedure demonstrated good practice. These included abscess pathways, fracture pathways, and plastic surgery pathways. Another example of this would be hot lists for urgent procedures separate to emergency CPOD lists. It was reported that 64.3% of hospitals had a specific protocol for the children and young people who may require emergency procedures under anesthetic, but with variability in the content. Notably, many protocols did not include fasting requirements for surgery, and importantly, arrangements around theater access and escalation were often not included. 6. Access to theaters. Emergency, CPOD, theater access. 1. Dedicated emergency, CPOD, theater, for all patients, was the most common arrangement among hospitals that had such theaters. It was of note that in 10 hospitals, emergency procedures were carried out on children and young people, but there was no dedicated emergency theater. In the hospitals that had dedicated emergency, CPOD, theaters, 97.5% had access for children and young people, and in all but 2, the theater was open and staffed on a 24/7 basis. Lack of access to a 24/7 emergency theater could lead to unnecessary delays in hospitals that provide emergency surgery for children and young people. Elective procedures were undertaken in emergency theaters in 18.5% of hospitals. However, this is not their intended purpose, and the usage should be reviewed locally. Multidisciplinary emergency theater handover meetings could facilitate better use of theaters, but these occurred daily in only 77.6% of hospitals. Booking systems. A theater booking system was available in 94.4% hospitals, although 6 were unable to comment on this. Only 28.9% of those hospitals were able to confirm that the booking system flagged patients who breached their allocated timeframe to surgery. This indicates that most hospitals are unable to accurately identify when children and young people are waiting too long for surgery, which has implications, such as fasting and risk of deterioration for all patients awaiting emergency surgery, including adults. Regardless of whether the booking system could flag a breach, only 17.8% of hospitals with any booking system audited breaches to allocated booking times for emergency procedures in children and young people. Theater coordination. Theater coordinating managers or clinicians were only available in 42% of hospitals despite guidelines recommending this. When present, there was still variation by hospital type with regard to the provision of a manager. Only 36.4% of hospitals had a clinician responsible for assessing capacity in theaters on a daily basis. Data from the real-time survey highlighted that not all patients had an emergency surgery coordinator involved in their care, with only 67.7% patients having one. Theater coordination is important. Our data show that procedures were delayed less often when an emergency coordinator was involved compared with when they were not involved. Booking urgency. The majority of patients in the study sample period were booked as urgent or expedited procedures. There were 81.6% of patients who needed a procedure in under 24 hours, with 13.4% needing surgery in under 1 hour. The booking urgency was appropriate for the majority of patients. There were 9 patients booked as urgent who reviewers reported should have been booked as immediate, 7 booked as expedited who should have been urgent, and 12 booked as urgent who should have been expedited. Overall, 17 patients should have been booked as a more urgent procedure and 12 as less urgent. Reviewers reported delays from booking a case to the start of the procedure for 9.6% of patients. This was more likely to affect patients who were booked for a more urgent procedure than those booked for a less urgent procedure, and had an impact on the outcome for 6 patients. Age did not influence the likelihood of a delay to starting the procedure. Procedure delays. The most frequently reported delays from booking to starting a procedure were related to organizational issues, including lack of theater availability and emergency workload. Clinicians reported that emergency procedures often displaced other emergency work and sometimes elective work. These observations suggest that lack of organization of emergency theater workload often impacted on other patients. In particular, patients were not operated on within the expected timeframe and adequate escalation did not occur. Reviewers were of the opinion that hospitals should adopt processes that ensure robust monitoring of emergency theater access, including proactive escalation if delays are foreseen. Data from the real-time survey indicated that there was a delay in undertaking the procedure for 25.3% of patients. These data reflected those seen in the peer review. Facility-related delays were the most common cause of delay, primarily due to the emergency theater being occupied or a more urgent case taking priority. Where patient-related delays were identified, both the Clinician real-time survey and the reviewer assessment identified lack of fasting as a cause of the delay to the procedure starting. The differences were intentionally highlighted by collecting data at the time of the procedure where information may not get written in the case notes. The need for blood products being a good example. Operator-related delays included lack of consent, essential investigations not being undertaken, and the surgeon not being available. Where there was a delay, only 12 patients had documented evidence that there was escalation of care to the theater team. The reviewers expressed concern about the number of cases, 50 patients, where they were unable to determine whether there had been an escalation of care when a delay occurred. It was noted that electronic records can record data on booking and escalation and should be used to facilitate audit and quality improvement. There were more likely to be delays during the early part of the week compared with later in the week and at weekends, suggesting capacity mismatch at certain times. This could be due to batching as a result of lack of provision of 24/7 resources for investigation, particularly at weekends and out of hours, or inadequate theater access such as hot, urgent lists. Nearly a fifth of patients experienced delays, with 86.5% experiencing multiple delays. Surgeons indicated that the care could have been improved in some way for 11.9% of patients, while anesthetists identified room for improvement in the care of 13.6% of patients. Reviewers rated the overall quality of care as being good for most patients. However, there was room for improvement in 31% of patients, which mainly involved only slight amendments to the existing pathways of care to improve the quality of care provided. Reviewers identified organizational care as the area with the greatest room for improvement, noting the fact that access to emergency theaters was often limited by the theater being occupied or more urgent cases taking priority. Reviewers noted that good care was provided when specialties used planned lists for less urgent cases. Emergency procedures are the stress test of a system and can reveal areas where care could be improved. Auditing these procedures can help to ascertain whether the system is working. However, such audits were undertaken in only 41.7% of hospitals. 7. Training, confidence, and experience. Delivering care to children and young people in emergency situations demands knowledge, skill, experience, competence, and confidence. The patient population presents across a wide spectrum of ages with associated changes in physiology, and patients who present as emergencies can often have significant comorbidities that contribute to their presentation. Furthermore, as for all areas of healthcare, patients or their parents' carers may present with language barriers, may be neurodivergent, or have intellectual developmental disabilities or difficulties which may make them more vulnerable in the healthcare setting. These communication difficulties may impede the ability for patients to express discomfort, complicating preoperative assessments and postoperative care. The fast pace and unfamiliarity of an emergency care setting may make the situation more challenging for everyone. With this increased complexity, it is vital that staff delivering care have access to suitable training and support. Clinicians who delivered surgical care to children and young people in tertiary pediatric centers commonly used both internal and external continuing professional development, CPD, opportunities, while those in university teaching hospitals and district general hospitals used them less frequently. Resident doctors in tertiary centers not only had better access to internal CPD, but also to external CPD compared to their colleagues in district general hospitals, indicating that those in district general hospitals had less access to CPD overall. Changes in location of care will result in some units operating on relatively small numbers of patients, underscoring the importance of relevant CPD and refresher training. Access to training is important, but making the diagnosis, operating and managing the postoperative care of a sufficient number of patients is of equal or even greater importance. The average number of emergency procedures undertaken per annum was 39 for surgeons and 58 for anesthetists, with a median of 15 and 30 respectively. When asked whether they thought this was enough to maintain competency, 83.9% of surgeons and 79.3% of anesthetists thought that it was. Consultants and resident doctors in less specialized hospitals tended to feel less confident about their competence.